So who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? That's the question at the heart of today's passage. In fact, that's the question at the heart of the whole of John's gospel that we've been working our way through so far this year. Each of the four gospels in the New Testament has a particular purpose and a focus. And John wrote his gospel later than the others, and he's primarily concerned with revealing and declaring the true identity and nature of Jesus. That Jesus is God in human form, that Jesus came to save us from sin and from death, and that Jesus will come again to restore this broken world. Over the past few weeks, we've been exploring some of the recurring themes that come up again and again and again in John's gospel. You may have remembered some of them. I'd like to pick on just three of them to start with. One of them is that Jesus came to reveal his glory. We see this through the various miracles that we're told about. But John is also keen to tell us that Jesus performed his miracles not as an end in themselves, but to reveal something much greater about the identity of Jesus. Another theme that goes throughout this gospel is that the identity of Jesus, the person of Jesus, is constantly disputed. In between these miracles, we have sections of teaching, as in today's passage, where we hear disputes between the crowds and the religious leaders about who Jesus actually is. And it's into these situations that Jesus speaks, often causing a bit more confusion and a bit of unrest, but also revealing something greater about himself. And then another theme that's relevant to today's passage is the use of the phrase, "My time has not yet come." Jesus uses this phrase. We see it all throughout John's gospel, and we see it twice in the passage we've just read. "My time has not yet come." There's this clear sense that Jesus is working towards something, towards a significant moment, which we know is his death and his resurrection. And he's keen that his words and his actions don't lead to that event happening too soon. And again, this is all about Jesus revealing his identity, revealing who he is in the right way at the right time. And so this chapter is addressing this very important question, using these recurring themes again. And the question that it's addressing is the question, who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? As we explore this passage today, it's important to understand the context that's going on in this story. We read in the first verse of chapter 7 that Jesus has been wandering in Galilee, purposefully avoiding Judea because the Jews were waiting there to kill him. And as Sarah said, that's a very good reason not to go there. But there's a very important Jewish festival taking place. It's called the Feast of the Tabernacles. And this was fast approaching. And this was an occasion when all Jewish men would pilgrimage to Jerusalem to celebrate this feast, which took place around harvest time and celebrated God's provision to the Israelites when they wandered in the desert, having escaped from slavery in Egypt. And there was this expectation among Jesus' family and friends that he would attend this important festival. We read that his brothers actually told him what he should do. They said, "You ought to leave here and go to Judea so that your disciples may see the miracles that you do. No one who wants to become a public figure acts in secret. Since you are doing these things, show yourself to the world." And this is really the first occasion in this passage when the identity of Jesus is somewhat misunderstood. After they give this instruction to Jesus, we read in the passage that even his brothers didn't yet believe in him. Jesus responds to his brothers with the well-known line that I've mentioned, "My time has not yet come." And his brothers told him to show himself to the world. But Jesus tells them that the world hates him because he's different, whereas the world cannot hate them because they're part of it. In other words, the people and the powers and the systems and the structures of the society in Judea and the world around them wouldn't receive Jesus. They would hate him because of his teaching and his actions and the way that he so often subverted and stood in direct opposition to their way of life. Jesus is, in some sense, rebuking his brothers and saying to them, going to Judea is fine for you because you're part of this sinful world. And as such, you don't fully understand me. You don't fully recognize who I am yet. But then, interestingly, we read that Jesus waited for them to leave. And then he followed on behind in secret, hiding his identity and waiting for the right time to speak and to act. If he'd simply walked into Jerusalem with his brothers and with all of his disciples, he would have risked a Palm Sunday type event happening far too early before the right time had come. So he snuck into Jerusalem very secretly. He heard all the gossip about himself. He heard all the people whispering. The Jews were looking out for him. Where is that man? Some who spoke called him a good man, recognizing his quality, but somewhat underestimating him. And others accused him of deception. But still, at this stage, as Jesus was hearing all this gossip about himself, no one was calling him the Savior or the Messiah. And Jesus waited. He waited until everyone was gathered in the temple courts, and halfway through the feast, he began to teach. It's not that Jesus didn't want to show himself, that he didn't want to reveal his identity to the Jewish people, but he was waiting for the right time. He wanted to do it his way, and he wanted to do it in a way that he couldn't be arrested before having the opportunity to speak and do all that God at the Father was leading him to do. But you might wonder why Jesus wouldn't walk into Jerusalem publicly, but would take the risk of standing up in front of everyone in the temple courts, in the most public of settings, with the eyes of those who most wanted him dead fixed on him. And I think this is something to do with his teaching. He teaches in such a way that it makes it very difficult for them to arrest him on this occasion. First of all, in verses 14 to 21, he starts by directly calling out those who are planning to kill him, which would likely have put pressure on them when there were so many members of the public who thought that Jesus was a good man and quite liked him. He says, "Has not Moses given you the law? Why are you trying to kill me?" And the crowds ask, "Who is trying to kill you?" One of those laws of Moses is do not murder. After posing that question, why are you trying to kill me? If they arrested him, firstly, that would appear as if they were breaking their own law. And then secondly, they risked a rebellion from the many people who actually supported Jesus. After this, he then addresses head on one of their biggest accusations against him. The accusation that he'd healed someone on the Sabbath, which was against their Jewish customs. He pointed out that they are very happy to circumcise people on the Sabbath, which they saw as a really vital action. Yet they condemned him for saving someone's life on the same day, which is surely just as important. This teaching on the law made it very hard for them to arrest Jesus on this occasion without looking like hypocrites themselves. But the other thing that saved Jesus on this occasion from being arrested and killed, I think, was just how baffling his teaching was, how baffled people were by the words that he was speaking and his actions. They simply didn't know what to make of Jesus. And because of that, they didn't know what to do with him. It was this question of who is Jesus that became the talk of the town. It was on everyone's tongues. They were whispering it and speaking it and debating it in the temple courts. In verses 25 onwards, we hear something of this utter confusion being played out. Some people start asking, isn't this the man they want to kill? Why has no one spoken or arrested him yet? Have the religious authorities concluded that he is in fact the Messiah? Others said, but we know where this man is from. He's from Galilee. The scriptures say that we won't know where the Messiah is from. But others pointed out the fact that the Messiah was meant to come from Bethlehem, not knowing that this is where Jesus was born. Jesus responds to all of these questions, but as is often the case with him, he appears to speak a little bit in riddles. Yes, you know me, and you know where I am from. I am not here on my own, but he who sent me is true. You do not know him, but I know him, because I am from him, and he sent me. Now, at this, I suspect people probably thought, what on earth is he talking about? There may have been some people who understood that he was making the point that he was one with God the Father. And actually, this clearly upset some people, because there were some, we read, who tried to seize him after he spoke these words. But we read that again that no one laid a hand on him because his time had not yet come. Now, this might have been divine intervention. People physically couldn't touch him because of God's power at work. It might be that there were still many supporters in the crowd, and those who tried to seize him simply couldn't manage it. But what comes across to me in this whole situation is that it sounds like a situation of utter chaos. Just try to picture it in your own minds. Imagine it. Imagine being in the temple courts, heaving with people, in the middle of this really important Jewish festival, with Jesus standing there teaching in riddles, a whole load of people confused, some people in uproar trying to seize him, others supporting him, people whispering in the crowd, debates taking place amongst the religious leaders. In the end, we read that even the guards who are sent to arrest Jesus don't do it because they're so uncertain about the whole situation and whether he'd actually done anything wrong and about his identity and whether he might just be who he says he is. And so because of all this chaos that's going on, Jesus avoids arrest because his time had not yet come. And instead of being arrested, Jesus speaks a message that may just have captured the hearts and minds of many people in the crowd and might have just angered a few more. Right at the heart of this Jewish festival, which celebrated God's provision to the Israelites in the wilderness, with one of the central stories of this festival being God providing water from a stone in the middle of the wilderness, Jesus says this: if anyone is thirsty, let them come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scriptures have said, streams of living water will flow from within them. Again, these words would have angered some people. Jesus taking the central theme of this really important festival and making it all about himself. Jesus taking one of the greatest acts of God to the people of Israel that they'd ever experienced and claiming to have the same power and authority. But as well as creating anger, this was a message that had the power to change lives. It was and is a message that for 2,000 years has been misunderstood by many people. But it's equally a message that has changed the lives of millions of people who have received that living water that Jesus talks about for themselves. Jesus, in this passage, is saying, I am the one, I'm the only one who can quench your thirst for freedom, your thirst for peace, your thirst for salvation. If only you would believe in me. I think the ideal ending to this story would have been for all the crowds listening, including the religious leaders, to have their eyes open to Jesus, to his true identity as the Son of God and the Messiah who'd come to save them and quench their thirst, and that they'd all kneel before him. But that's not at all what happened. We read in the verses that follow that even after these words, again, there is more debate and discussion about who Jesus is. Some hear him and say, this man must be a prophet. There are others who hear him and say, he must be the Christ. There are others who want him dead. Verse 43 sums up the feeling in the crowd quite well. The people were divided because of Jesus. Some wanted to seize him, but no one laid a hand on him. I'd love to think that I'm one of those people who would have recognized Jesus for who he really was and would have knelt down before him, receiving the living water that he offers. But is this the reality for many of us? Is that really what I would have done? Or do we all go through times when we fail to recognize Jesus and try to see him a bit like his brothers did, through the eyes of their own worldly desires and expectations? Do we at times try to put Jesus in our box and tell him to do what we want him to do rather than receiving what he knows that we need? Do we at times, like some in the story, get angry at Jesus and doubt that he is who he says he is, because he doesn't always reveal himself in the way that we want or expect? What do all the characters in this story long for the most? I think the Jewish priests and the religious leaders in this story were wanting social stability. They were after power and wanted their religious influence to remain firmly intact for many years to come. And then the crowds, they'd seen the miracles that Jesus had done. They wanted him to do more to heal them. They wanted Jesus to fix their broken situation and be the Messiah who would overthrow the Roman Empire. They wanted a prophet who would speak to them as the prophets of old did after many years of what seemed like silence from God. The people were all so confused and so blinded by the things that they thought they wanted that they couldn't see that Jesus was offering them what they actually needed. They couldn't see Jesus for who he really is, the Savior of the world, the God who gave them water in the desert, because he didn't fit their desires and their expectations. They're thirsty for him, but they didn't even know it. How about us? In our world today, with current issues that we see in the news of COVID and the war in Ukraine, the cost of living crisis, and that's just to mention a few things, how much are we like the crowds in this story in our desires and our expectations? Perhaps we want a God who heals, a God who brings stability, a God who can fix our broken world, a God who will speak to us about the situations that are going on around us, a God who will overthrow the corrupt powers of this world, a God who will provide that job or that car or whatever it is that we perceive that we need. And actually, none of those things that I've just mentioned are wrong in themselves. And I think it's okay to pray for the things that we think that we need, recognizing that God is bigger than all of these situations. But like the crowds and the religious leaders, I think we can become so consumed with our own desires, our own questions and expectations of God, that we become increasingly thirsty whilst missing the real Jesus who can quench our thirst. We can often feel like we're wandering in the wilderness, wondering if God will come through and provide. Perhaps we spend time doubting and questioning Jesus and where he's at work in our lives and our world today. And actually, again, that's something that it's okay to do, and I think Jesus wants us to do that. It's okay to ask him questions and admit to him our fears and our doubts. And it's okay to tell him that we're thirsty and to seek his provision. But in asking these questions, we have to ask them with an openness to his response looking different to our desires and expectations. But let's see how he responds when we ask him directly for his help and ask him for what we think we need. And when we ask him questions like, who are you, Jesus? Where are you today in my life and in this world? One Christian writer, a man called Ravi Zacharias, said this about his relationship with Jesus. I came to him because I did not know which way to turn. I remained with him because there is no other way I wish to turn. I came to him longing for something I did not have. I remain with him because I have something I will not trade. I came to him as a stranger. I remain with him in the most intimate of friendships. I came to him unsure about the future. I remain with him certain about my destiny. How do we come to Jesus today? Who is he to us? But then what does it mean for us to remain with him? I pray that today we can each approach Jesus thirsty and empty-handed, knowing him a little, but longing to know him more. And that in our questioning and our doubting and our prayers, that we would find the Jesus who says, "Here I am. Come to me and drink. Believe in me, and streams of living water will flow from within you."